Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews.
Shopping tips.
Driving green.
Electric cars.
Classic cars.
And plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, I am Tom Appel, and this is episode 106 of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Hey, thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, please check us out at consumerguide.com. While you are there, check out our best buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or truck. You will also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles that we drive here at Consumer Guide and all sorts of other fun stuff. And this is important, you can catch up on back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, let's see who's online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and her freelance work is all over the internet. Hey, Jill Simonello.
Hey, Tom Appel.
How are you?
I'm good. You know, I ran into somebody that we know this week.
Who'd you run into?
I ran into Tom Beeman, who is a regular listener of the show and an old friend from way back in the industry. He wanted me to say hello to you and Damon, and that he is a huge fan of our show, that this is his favorite podcast. So I just wanted to give a quick shout out to him and say it was really great to see him last week.
Well, that is cool to hear. I've got some stuff for you. Two shout outs.
Okay.
One of them is from Sam Fiorani, our friend from Auto Forecast Solutions. Sam didn't exactly correct me, but he wanted to know how I pronounce Audi.
Okay.
And Audi is how I pronounce Audi. If
okay.
that is wrong, please let me know.
Okay, so I pronounce it Audi.
Audi?
Yeah.
Audi.
Audi.
So I say Audi.
All right.
I'm very Illinoisan, I think.
And I may be Spanishing it because I'm like Audi. I don't know.
Also, I heard from Johnny Putman of Steve and Johnny fame, and she had her own take on what cloudy lemonade is.
Okay.
So I did a little checking, and it seems like cloudy lemonade is mostly the unfiltered stuff, but there is an older reference, and it's a southern USA thing, but it is also known as a creamy lemonade, and it is lemonade with condensed sweetened milk in it.
Ugh. Ugh.
Apparently, it is beloved by those who know it.
Yeah.
All right. So, Jill, what do you think?
Yeah. That's about what I have to say about that.
We'll need to record that and use it as a summary. All right. He's the managing editor here at Consumer Guide, and his new business, Breakup Haiku, will help you unload that unwanted significant other with class and dignity. Welcome, Damon Bell.
All I can think of is step out the back, Jack. Get a new, what is it, make a new plan, Stan. No need to be coy, Roy.
Set yourself free.
Set yourself free, Lee. Yeah, those aren't necessarily haikus, though.
No.
I remember a high school friend and I used to make fun of that song. I shouldn't say make fun of that song, because that's a great song. We used to jokingly like sing along with that song and then say, make a new plan, Gary. Step out the back, Joe. Like, and deliberately not rhyme the names. Drop off the key, Joe. Oh, yeah, Heinrich. It's even better when it's a multi-syllable name. I have to say, this was an especially difficult episode for me to be quiet in that opening segment. With all the cloudy lemonade talk.
I was like, how do you feel about the cloudy lemonade?
Exactly. I don't think that would be very good. Citrus and milk just...
No. It's a big no.
But then you have the orange sickle thing, and I've never been crazy about the cream sickle. Isn't that like orange and cream?
What about
somehow?
Key lime pie?
Not a fan. I am not a fan of key lime pie, and my family loves it, so I'm kind of odd person out there. And also, I've come around a little bit, but I've never been fully on board with the orange Julius either.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't like that. That's not refreshing. It's weird and thick.
Because there's lots of vanilla in that, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things orange should be refreshing.
Yeah. So the cloudy lemonade can mean both unfiltered lemonade with some kind of pulp and such in it, but then also, did you say sweetened condensed milk?
Yes. Mm. It's also known as creamy lemonade.
Ugh.
You'll find more references if you search on creamy lemonade.
All right. I will need to look that up because I'm intrigued enough to... I will give it a shot and try it, but my hopes aren't high for liking it.
And that was the recipe section of the show today.
Yeah, exactly.
Damon, my hearing aid cut out earlier. What's going on the show today?
We've got one of our favorite folks in the industry returning to our show today. That is Joe Weisenfelder. He's the executive editor over there at Cars.com. And Cars.com recently had a very interesting live Q&A session broadcast online that's called Guide to the EV Curious.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Guide for the EV Curious. And it's a fantastic primer if you're like a lot of people out there today that just we're hearing so much about electric vehicles, but a lot of the finer points, it's kind of fallen through the cracks. So it's a great overview of just what it means to have an electric vehicle, what you should really have at your home in order to have one properly, and whether an EV is right for you. So we're going to have Joe on today to fill us in on that, and we'll have an EV discussion with him. And then also, speaking of EVs, it's been a little while since we've done a first segment car review. So
well,
why don't we?
Whose fault is that?
We blame you, Tom.
I think we can spread. I think we can spread the blame evenly amongst us. Although, Tom, you were the one that said, hey, we should do this. So I will credit you with getting us back on track with it.
Ooh, I get
but
a point.
What's that?
Only a half a point.
You get a point. That's right.
Half a point.
That's right. But speaking of car reviews and EVs, there's a new for 2022 EV that we've all driven, and that is the Mazda MX-30.
Yes.
It's... Let's get the elephant in the room out of the way first.
I was going to say exactly that.
And that's the first line of my review, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it's a new for 2022 vehicle, EV, but it is launching with a range that would be more appropriate for a new for 2012 vehicle. There's its maximum driving range is about 100 miles. Which,
right. Yeah.
Is well off the pace, significantly off the pace for a modern EV.
And at a time when what we're seeing is really profoundly impressive ranges coming from new vehicle manufacturers. The Lucid Air has a range over 500 miles. The Mustang Mach-E in one particular trim level, I think, is 304 miles. And the Chevy Bolt now is 260 miles. So people are expecting these multi-hundred mile ranges. So 100 feels like a disappointment.
It does. I think basically to my way of thinking right now, the basement is if you're not at 200 miles, you're kind of off significantly off the pace with a brand new electric vehicle.
Now, all that said, is relatively affordable, and they're only going to be selling it in California, where
to start.
And the interesting thing about California, for people who don't know, because of something called CARB, the California Air Resources Board, which is really one of the legislative and governing leaders about clean air activity for the U.S., there are 14 states that apply CARB rules to their states, for example. There are compliance laws in California where manufacturers have to sell a certain amount of zero emissions vehicles. For that reason, there are vehicles available in California that we have never seen in Illinois.
Yeah.
And this vehicle is going to start its life there, giving Mazda its first ever all-electric vehicle. But one of the interesting things about this vehicle, too, is that it is not exactly priced like a 100-mile vehicle, in my mind.
No. And when I jumped down into my article with, like, how much it cost, you're looking at a base price of just under $35,000. And then, you know, to go to the Premium Plus package, you're looking at, about $39,000. And so in comparison, you know, if you look at the Nissan Leaf or the Chevrolet Bolt, you're looking at, like, $28,000 or $34,000, respectively. So, the Bolt... is I would say comparably priced to the, you know, base version of the MX-30, but also it has, you know, 150 more miles of range. So, the pricing and the range are the two tough things to swallow on this, but I loved the MX-30 in every other way.
Jill, I want to talk about something real quick, and then we'll get back to our impressions of the vehicle. The Bolt is sort of working with a handicap right now because the Chevy no longer qualifies for the federal tax credit. Nissan does. So the Nissan comes across as pretty much a bargain. Yeah. And, of course, that federal tax credit applies to this because Mazda's never sold an electric vehicle before. But yeah, to get to our impressions of the vehicle, I actually rather liked it, but go ahead.
Oh, I thought it was it's typical Mazda. You know, it drives really well. It has really nice finishing touches. And one of the really interesting things that I thought they did is they made it an EV that drives like their combustion engine vehicles. So they're sporty and peppy, but they don't have like an insane mode. So, you know, you look at Tesla and some of the other electric cars out there, they really take advantage of the torque and allow you to go from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Well, Mazda doesn't do that with the MX-30. You know, basically what they're doing is they're making it peppy like their, you know, regular gasoline engined vehicles are peppy. And they hold lines really well. I had the opportunity to drive this in California, and we were on some curvy roads and some mountain areas, and it drives sporty, and it was fun to drive.
Yeah, I agree. It was a lot of fun to drive. It's a little bit narrow. The center console is wide, so as a big guy, I probably wasn't as accommodated as some people are, but that's my problem. but I agree with you about the driving experience. It feels like a Mazda. That was exactly what I was going to say. It is fun to drive. It's responsive. The steering is very accurate and responsive. Driving it's nice. Being in the front of the vehicle is nice. I do not know why. And people tend to do this, manufacturers tend to do this with electric vehicles, where they throw in weird styling cues or feature cues that are challenging. But this vehicle is a two-door with two half doors that are hinged at the back.
Right, suicide doors.
For the rear, suicide doors, exactly.
And although you'd never hear them called that nowadays.
No. But no.
But there's absolutely no darn reason for that.
No.
Well, Dan, you have kids.
I use this vehicle to take my kids to school when I had it, and that was way more complicated than you might expect, because it's a tradition. Yeah, it's a normal front, you know, normal front doors, but then those half back doors, they're hinged at the rear, and they cannot be opened independently of the front doors. There's no external latches. You have to come at it from, you know, there's an internal latch release that is kind of awkward to reach. And especially if you're a kid in the back seat, very, very stingy rear seat room, too. Like, my kids are 10 and 8, and even they didn't really have enough space with their booster seats. So not a practical back seat for even kids, let alone adults. And
I sit back there fine, Damon.
you're gonna
put that out there.
you're a special case. You and I are on opposite ends of the percentile spectrum height wise. So
true.
But getting the kids out in the back, out from the back, when you have to open that rear door is just very cumbersome. And if you are in a tight parking spot in a grocery store parking lot or Target or whatever, and you've got cars on either side of you, and you need to get a kid out of a passenger out of the back seat, you open both doors with a car parked right next to you. You've now trapped yourself in that tiny space between the two open doors. So those rear doors are marginally better than no doors at all in my book.
Well, and to be fair, though, Mazda, I don't think, intends for this to be a car to carry rear seat passengers. You know, during the press presentation, they totally talked about somebody who is either single or dual income, no kids, owning this car, somebody who is younger, somebody who this is going to be their first EV. They're just trying to wet their feet into the EV spectrum. So I don't think that they intended this to be a car to carry kids or even rear seat passengers. It was like more of an occasional rear seat passenger thing. So I don't know. I mean, I hear you.
Yeah, I understand all that. I don't think the, and this is my opinion, I don't think the styling is quite sexy enough. And frankly, I don't think the driving experience is, it has that Mazda handling feel, but it is not a particularly powerful car, even compared to a Bolt EV. So if I was going to settle for 100 miles of range and very limited practicality in an EV, I'm just going to get a Mini Cooper SE, which I found significantly more fun handling-wise and zippier to drive, despite the similarly limited range.
And what was the range of that, Damon?
Cooper SE is also about 100 miles.
About 100 miles. And is that priced similarly? That's a little bit more money.
I think they're pretty competitive price-wise. I'd have to look it up to be sure, but I think the Cooper SE might even be a shade cheaper because, again, that is a car that Mini already has. It's not a dedicated platform like the MX-30.
So we're out of time, but we need to throw this out. Mazda intends to make this vehicle available with what they call a range extender, a gasoline-powered range extender. In this case, it's going to be rotary because Mazda can't do anything that isn't rotary. But that'll be available too, and I wonder if they intend to sell that as the perfect solution for the EV situation, where you can go 100 miles and then this very small, very light motor takes over. And it'll work like the Chevrolet Volt did, where the electric motor will drive a generator that powers the battery. There will never be direct contact between the electric motor and the wheels. But we'll see where that goes, because that would have an impact on price too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Joe Weisenfelder of Cars.com. Stick around. Hey, it's Tom. Did you know that with Electrify America's vast electric vehicle charging network, you can now drive your EV from coast to coast? And with their ultra-fast charging stations, you'll get back on the road even faster. With more than 650 convenient locations nationwide, just pick your destination and hit the road. Visit ElectrifyAmerica.com and see how Electrify America is bringing freedom to EV drivers. That's ElectrifyAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I'm glad you stuck around today. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly recommend that you follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. I promise to be entertaining. All right. Our guest today is the award-winning executive editor over at Cars.com. He is also North American Car of the Year juror. Welcome to the Car Stuff Podcast again, Joe Weisenfelder.
Thank you for having me. I promise not to be entertaining.
Well, you already missed it right there because that was entertaining.
See? Joe, see what I did there?
Yeah, no, that was good. So I think this is your second visit, so we now officially refer to you as a friend of the show.
Excellent.
All right.
It's good to
Joe,
be a friend.
You and your Cars.com friends did something very interesting recently, and I'd like you to tell us about it. Is the EV guide, or is it the Cars.com guide for the EV curious? This was a video presentation. I watched all of it, and I thought it was awesome. Tell us about it.
We did a kind of a, I don't know, we called it, I hate to say this, but we called it a fancy Zoom. It was a fancy webinar. So it was a consumer facing. It was for you know, all consumers to check out, a live kind of with some recorded segments, guide for people who are interested in EVs but didn't know much, or maybe even people who knew some things, because there's just so much more information out there now and so many more vehicles coming out now that it's another big push for EVs. But a lot of the misconceptions are still out there.
Sure.
And We've come to recognize, as you know, EV owners, because Cars.com purchased its first plug-in vehicles, a Nissan Leaf and a Chevy Volt, 10 years ago, and I had my first home charging system 10 years ago, that there's certain things that are just so hard to understand about electric vehicles if you don't own one. And it's, you know, you see the conundrum. It's hard for people to grasp what it's like. And it is very different in some ways. And it's not how they drive. You get in, you drive them, they drive like other cars. They may be quieter, they may be quicker than you expect, and all that. And actually, they bring a lot. They are advantages. But there's so many things people don't understand. And they're typically about things like range and other stuff like that. Too much emphasis on public infrastructure, for one thing. So we thought, we got to do something. Or, you know, maybe that's a little bit dramatic, but we chose to try and share some of these stories, like learn from what we've learned, to try and help people understand what's going on and what they might consider buying, and even help some people understand that maybe they're not a candidate for an EV.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that we should start with, and I know, Joe, that this is a core position of yours, and I agree with it 100%, that if you are going to have a full electric vehicle, a home charger, 240-volt level 2 home charger is a necessity. Can you talk a little bit about why that is?
Absolutely. The reason is that there are multiple reasons. One of the first things we share with people is we tell them in the presentation, the video is still available to watch.
And we will link to that, Joe.
Is slow. Great. And charging is slow. And then you can find it at cars.com/news as well, or our YouTube channel. But charging is slow. Even what is called fast charging is slow if your only point of reference is sticking a nozzle in a gas tank. And I have to say, just to be clear about this, cars.com is, you know, very much in favor of electric vehicles. We like them for the right buyer. And we think it's important to understand that when you charge at home overnight, when the car's just sitting there anyway, you start out every morning with a full quote-unquote tank. So you should be thinking about the miles per day, not the miles per tank full like you would with a gasoline car, unless you're, you know, thinking about going on long trips. Public charging, even the fat DC fast charging, and I keep calling it that instead of level 3 because colloquially we call it level 3, but technically, according to the standard, that's not what it's called. DC fast charging is not fast. It's getting faster, and we're, as people who have done this for a while, we're happy to see that you can charge a car to 80% in what, I don't know, a half hour? But to people who are EV curious, they're like, what? A half hour? Are you kidding me? It takes longer. Sometimes it just doesn't work. And it often costs more, which eliminates the advantage of driving electric. In most cases, driving electric can cost, depending on where you live, depending on gas prices and electric prices, which vary all over the map, literally, it can cost half as much per mile to drive electric. But if you are charging in public, not the case. More often than not, you're losing that advantage. And then there's the other one that people are often surprised by, which is most manufacturers of these vehicles acknowledge that if you DC fast charge frequently, you will compromise the long-term range of your battery. So they recommend against it. And that is something that may be addressed in the future or improved in the future, but it's just not something you want to make a habit of. If those other reasons aren't enough to convince you that home charging is the way to go.
Joe, I haven't heard much in recent years about the level 3 or DC fast charging impact on battery life, but it was something that was discussed a lot when, for example, the Nissan Leaf first came out. And I remember speaking to someone at Nissan on the record about that, and they made it very clear that fast charging was going to have an impact on the long-term durability of the battery. I don't know why that conversation has gone away. Maybe because we're talking so much about public charging infrastructure, and because that needs to be fast charging almost to make it make sense. But do you have any numbers or any statistics about the impact of that, of fast charging on battery life?
Well, the only number I've seen, and it's been quoted by a couple of manufacturers, and not necessarily for their vehicle. I mean, it's usually an aggregate because we're all just learning, you know, based on vehicles that are out there, is you can lose 10% over the, you know, normal life or the warranty period from lots of DC fast charging, 10% of the capacity, which actually isn't terrible, but it's certainly more than you want to. And again, it varies with the vehicle. I mean, some people will, of course, claim, well, Teslas don't lose that much. But there are different reasons for that. I mean, Teslas tend to have larger batteries. So what does a larger battery mean? It means, well, people are probably charging them less frequently, or they're not discharging as deeply and then charging as fully. And that also has an effect on battery life. Because, I mean, all it is for battery life is time and charge-discharge cycle. So if you're not charging and discharging as often, which is what you would do with a larger battery capacity battery, then that might be the issue. So 10% doesn't sound like too much of a penalty to pay, but it does, remember, come on top of the other thing that we mentioned in our guide, which is it is not just possible, but expected and accepted for EV batteries to lose about 20% of their capacity over that warranty period. Again, 8 to 10 years and, you know, 100,000 miles. I mean, you shouldn't be surprised. I mean, you know how your phone starts acting as it gets older.
Yes.
And the quality and the investment and the management and the cooling and all that stuff in an electric car is much better and more robust than in your phone, but the same chemistries and the same, you know, principles apply. So they do lose 20% of their capacity over that time. And we tell people, think about that when you're thinking about buying, if you're going to keep the car for a long time. And think about the other one that you guys know as well as I do, which is when winter comes, your capacity goes, your range goes down the drain. And this is universal. It doesn't matter about the manufacturer. It's and AAA finally put a nice number to it, which is take your range at 70 degrees Fahrenheit and then look at the same range at 20 degrees Fahrenheit. It is 40% lower. So then this is why you start looking at these percentages. All right, 40% plus 20% plus 10%. Pretty soon we're looking at a real amount of a range, you know?
Yeah, I think that chart that you referenced, it said, okay, you have a 300-mile range vehicle, and 40% of that, if for those people who can't do math in their heads, which would probably be most of us on this podcast, so I'm quoting the chart, it's 180 miles of range. That's a lot. You know, so I wanted to go back to the DC fast charging for a hot second, because you said a couple of times, you know, it's not fast, even though they're calling it DC fast charging. And there was one section in the EV Curious video that kind of talks about what that actually means, because we've seen manufacturers toss out numbers like, oh, with a super duper fast charge, it'll be 10 minutes and you'll be at 80% capacity. But even if an automaker says it's 10 minutes, it's not actually 10 minutes. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, our experience, and I suspect yours as well, is that when you actually charge these vehicles, they don't hit the you know, advertised maximum. I have seen it, and I don't mean to like throw these two under the bus, but just to show that it's widespread. With the Ford Mustang Mach-E and the Volkswagen ID.4, in good conditions, and different things affect how quickly a vehicle charges, temperature, how full it is to begin with. Anyone who's done, you know, any kind of driving VVs knows, if the battery is fuller, it charges slower. Actually, that's true of any rechargeable battery in anything. But things can seem optimal, and you plug it in, and you're like, why is it not charging faster? Now, some of the time, that could be the charger outside the vehicle. It's not necessarily the vehicle's fault, especially in cases where it's a privately owned charger and the charge point network, though it's pretty robust as a network, allows its owners to you know, set that. And if there are a lot of vehicles charging, it might reduce. You never know. So we're talking about reality here. Reality is seldom does the vehicle charge as quickly as it is stated that it should. And that is one of the things that people will run into. So we say just treat those claims as claims and remember all those other downsides to public charging. And also, this is a huge investment to buy an EV. And we bought ours 10 years ago, and there happened to be two charging stations in the garage across from the Cars.com offices that we were able to use. And they just showed up practically 3 weeks before we bought our vehicles. It was perfect, and they were free. And we used them. And let me tell you, in the course of 3 or 4 years, those stations went from free and always available to always taken when we got there, because mm-hmm. our office were near the exchanges and the traders got there early and parked their Teslas there, to billing for the first 4 hours, to being broken and then just vanishing from the parked garage. So if you're investing in a car, you need control of the charging. It's just, I don't recommend making this big of an investment on something that is, you know, in someone else's hands, like in the hands of, you know, a parking garage across from where you work, for example.
So Joe, we've just talked about why public charging may not be the answer, but you guys have found out, too, that charging at home may not be as easy as most people think. And in fact, I found this particular segment of the video just a little depressing, because I thought things would go easier than this. But tell us about your experience with home charging.
I think the best thing about home charging is once you're over that hump, it's great. I mean, you never have to go to a gas station again. You plug in and you can precondition the cabin before you get in when it's super hot or super cold out, which is actually a good idea as well, because it preserves your range, because all of your range, all of your heat and AC comes from the battery, and that's where your range, you know, comes from, obviously. The issue is people are accustomed to buying a car and just driving it. They don't have to call an electrician. They definitely don't have to call to get a permit or maybe another contractor if they, you know, have a long run between where the car parks and where the electric service panel is. So we had outfitted a number of our reviewers with home charging, and I can tell you the installation cost, and this excludes the charger itself, the level 2 EVSE as it's called, range from $900 for the simplest one, that happened to be mine, to $6,000. And the reason is it really depends on where you want to park. Even in the case where you do, you know, where you do, let's say, own the home or townhome or condo or whatever, and where the service panel, the fuse box, for want of a better term, is, and where you're going to park. And what's in between there? I mean, is there concrete? Does that have to be broken up and then patched? Is it grass? Do you have to go through some walls to run conduit? And do you have enough service? Is another big question. If you live in an old house with 60 amps total coming into the house, you might need to go up, you know, upgrade to 100 or 200 or from 100 to 200 amps, because a lot of these vehicles, rightly so, are drawing more current than, say, the Leaf did 10 years ago.
Right.
So you might need a 60-amp breaker to really make the most of the charging capability of these vehicles to add 30-plus miles per hour of charging to a Mustang Mach-E or a Volkswagen ID.4. And 60 amps, you heard what I said. I mean, your whole house might get 100 amps. Or, you know, you and to be clear, you typically, at least with ComEd here in Chicago, I don't think you pay to have them feed you more amperage, more current. But you, as the homeowner, would then have your electrician replace the service panel. And as soon as the service panel is being replaced, that can easily cost you $1,000, because it's labor and parts. And the other concern is always, once you change something in a house, you have to meet the current code and deal with the inspector. And if you're doing it permitted the right way, and we suggest you do, and if you want to get any kind of incentive, you should certainly do that way. And you should and we also point out that if you have a condo association or a homeowners association, that could be another hurdle, another obstacle for you.
So, Joe, I've got two thoughts real quick, because we're running out of time. One is, once you've done that, at least you've done it, and it's done for good. That should last a very long time. your charging station should. But the other
add value to your home.
That's true, right? That'll help you when you go to sell your home. But the other thing is, if you're married and your spouse also drives an EV, I suggest that there's going to be some strife, a little bit of
Who gets the charger?
Who gets the charger?
Or do you install two?
It is an interesting point, and that's one of the ones we make, which is we really think that you can solve a lot of the address a lot of the concerns about EVs if you get one EV in your household of two cars, because the national average in the U.S. for a household is two cars. Buy one that's electric for around town and short trips, charge overnight. It's always ready. And if you want to go on a long trip, take the conventional one. And then you're not thinking about stopping at DC fast charging or, Tesla supercharging stations, or worried about how much range your vehicle has. Because once you own an EV, you realize you really don't drive that much day to day. And every mile of range you get, you're really paying for it. It costs more.
Mm-hmm. Joe, we're out of time, but remind us, how can we watch the guide for the EV curious?
One of the easiest ways, I guess, is to go to our YouTube channel, YouTube.com/carscom, or you can probably still find it at cars.com/news, where there's actually more detail than even in the guide for the EV curious. We have more detail and all that stuff, and we're going to be covering more of this about our experience and costs and other considerations and how we feel about our different brands of chargers, which we're just kind of digging into. They're all a standard. Any vehicle that has the right connector will charge with these, but there are still differences in how they work and how they look and all that stuff. And we're going to be digging into that. It's going to be a busy time.
Well, cool. The video was awesome. I recommend everyone who wants to know anything about EV should watch that. Joe, you're known to tweet once every lunar cycle. How can people follow your tweets?
It's so long, I can't even remember. No, actually, my handle is @joe@cars.com, like spelled out, joe@cars.com. I honestly don't recall the last tweet I put up.
All right. He is Joe Weisenfelder. He is with cars.com. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Hey, thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill.
Hey, yeah.
You do social media stuff. Tell us about how people can follow you.
Yes, I do social media stuff. So I have accounts on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can find me at Jill Simonello. So that is just my name, all one word, JillSiminillo. And I also use the hashtag car du jour because I'm talking about the cars that I am driving today.
Damon, you've been using the hashtag yeehaw because you changed your Twitter handle to Cowboy Damon. What's that all about?
Actually, that would be Duke Boy Damon.
Duke Boy?
Yeah. I'm imagining ramping lots of 69 Dodge Chargers. No, I'm thinking about breakup haikus like you made up for me in the first segment. And it just occurs to me now, let me see, because it's haikus are 575 syllables, right?
Right.
So it's not me. No, it's not you. It's me. That's five syllables, right? So yeah. That's the first line of a breakup haiku.
Maybe. I've got one here from your press kit.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, you had this holstered in the first segment. We just didn't get to it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, excellent. I'm glad we've got it open for that now.
Oh, you want me to read it?
Yes, please do. I don't recall this press kit.
This is from the press kit. I'm getting bored. Recent dates super dull. I met someone new.
Ooh. See, that's harsh. It's not you as
it's classy.
It's not you, it's me as a blow softener. Even if it's not true, and it's almost never true. Okay. Anyway, I'm doing that now. I'm pulling it back on track. I'm at Damon Bell Likes Cars on Twitter.
All right. Hashtag yeehaw. All right. It is now quiz time. I hope you guys are ready. This week's topic is debut editions.
Oh. Mm. Wah, wah. Right.
Damon, you go first this week. Damon, for what year did the Kia Rondo debut? 2007, 2009, or 1911?
Wow. Oh, you pick something that's in the trough of everyone's memory.
That's the Kia Rondo. Very memorable ad campaign, not a very memorable vehicle. I liked it a lot. It was a great
movie. Oh, I love the Rondo. We actually had a Consumer Guide long-term Rondo.
Yeah, it was a wagon, non-wagon.
So you said 2007 and 2009.
Yes, and 1911.
And 1911. Oh, gosh. I'm going to say 2007.
All right. Jill, this question goes to you. The Kia Rondo, the beloved Kia Rondo, did that arrive for 2007, 2009, or 1911?
1911? No, that is one vehicle I actually have never driven.
Oh.
I never had the opportunity. So I'm trying, I think about where I was at points of my life and why I wouldn't have driven it. I'm going to say, I kind of agree with Damon about 2007, but like the point in my life when I was taking a break from automotive with 2009.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to say 2009.
You should have said 2007, Damon. Oh. You're on the board.
Okay.
Next question goes to Jill. Jill, for what model year did the Buick Rainier arrive? Was it 2004? 2002 or 1180?
Feels like 1180. Okay, so you were at the very beginning of when I started to even think about potentially writing about cars.
This was Buick's first ever crossover SUV thing, I believe.
Yeah, so I remember this vehicle existed. But I never drove that one either. I'm gonna say 2004.
2004. Damon, this question goes to you. The beloved Buick Rainier. 2004, 2002, or 1180?
I think I'm going to agree with Jill and say 2004 because my memory is that it trailed the other GM vehicles on that platform.
I believe you are correct. It also was not available in an extended wheelbase with a third row. You guys are both on the board, 2004.
All right.
2-1 in favor of Damon. Next question goes to Damon. Damon, for what model year did the Cadillac XLR debut? 2004, 2006, 2022? The XLR, of course, being their two-seat sports car. It was based on the Corvette. Pretty radically styled for the day.
Yeah, you said options are 2004, 2006, and your joke year, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, 2022, yeah.
Oh, you said 22, okay.
2022.
I'm gonna say 2006.
2006, Jill, this question goes to you. Cadillac XLR, art and, what was it called? The art and science design language.
I'm going to say 2004 because I feel like this is one of the first vehicles I had the opportunity to drive at a program. So I'm going to say 2004.
2004. Damon, you said 2006?
Mm-hmm.
Jill ties it up.
Ooh, really?
2004.
Yeah.
Wow. I was guessing 2006 because the Vette was a new generation for 05, and I was assuming it launched after a new generation, but I guess it was late in the previous gen Vette's life.
All right, this next question goes to Jill. Jill, for what year did the Pontiac G6 debut? 2003, 2005, or star date 41153.7?
Uh...
Pontiac's mid-sized car, also available as a coupe and convertible.
So you said 2003, 2005?
Yes, and start date 41,153.7.
I'm going to say 2005.
Damon, this question goes to you. 2003, 2005, or some date way in the future?
And this is just regular Pontiac G6, right?
Yeah, the debut of the Pontiac G6, yep.
Okay, I will agree with Jill and say 2005.
This game is close. It's now 3-3.
Oh.
Nice job, guys. Last question before
creating some tension.
All right. Damon, for what model year did the Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet debut? Was it 2008, 2011, or sometime during the Tang Dynasty?
I'm going to say 2011.
2011. This, of course, is Nissan's bizarre mid-sized crossover convertible, a vehicle that was never placed in the hands of journalists because we would have made fun of it.
I think we had one as a test vehicle.
Did we really?
It was that odd turquoise color. I'm pretty sure we did.
I didn't drive it.
Oh.
Oh. Jill, what year did the Nissan Murano Cross Cabriolet debut? 2008, 2011, or sometime during the Tang Dynasty?
I think I'm going to agree with Damon on 2011, and I do occasionally see these vehicles around the suburbs of Chicago.
I see them.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We have a tie. You're both correct. 4-4.
Oh.
Cross cab arrived for 2011, which means the bonus question actually matters.
Matters.
Oh, boy.
Which is exciting.
Dun, dun.
This goes to Jill first. Jill, founded in 1958, the International House of Pancakes, now IHOP, is known for its pancakes, obviously, and pre-COVID, the table presentation of four types of syrup, all of which are still available, just not set on the table. Jill, which of the following is not one of those types of syrup?
Oh, man, because you know I eat so many pancakes with syrup.
I need the fake IHOP syrup. Are you ready?
All right, yeah.
Blueberry? I'm sorry. Old fashioned, blueberry, butter pecan, cinnamon, or strawberry. One of those is fake. IHOP syrup.
So say that again. Old fashioned, blueberry,
which is maple, fake maple, blueberry, butter pecan, cinnamon, or strawberry.
I'm gonna. Oh man.
Clock is ticking here.
Dude. I know. I'm gonna go with my gut and say strawberry. For some reason, that just sounds weird.
You're saying strawberry's the fake.
Yeah.
David, this question goes to you. Which is fake? Old fashioned, blueberry, butter pecan, cinnamon, or strawberry IHOP syrup?
I'm hung up on either butter pecan or cinnamon. I think I'm gonna say cinnamon is the fake. I don't see cinnamon syrup.
Damon, you just won.
Ah! Everything needs cinnamon. Everything needs cinnamon. That's all I have to say is everything needs cinnamon.
You both went 4 out of 5 on the regular quiz. Congratulations. But Damon wins it on the utterly pointless bonus question.
Do I get a IHOP gift card as a reward?
No, but you get to use the Yeehaw hashtag.
Okay.
Yeehaw.
In the few remaining precious moments of the podcast, Damon, can you tell us what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog?
Yes. All kinds of good stuff once again this week. We've got a test drive gallery review of the Volkswagen Atlas Cross Sport SEL Premium V6 R-Line. That's all part of the title, official title of this vehicle.
Do you R-Line. Think that actually fits on like the Secretary of State index card?
No.
Probably not. There's probably some abbreviations going on there. But that's basically the top line trim level. SEL Premium is the top line trim level of the Atlas Crossport. And then the R-Line gear, that tacks on like another $1,700 or so. So that's the most decked out Crossport you can get at the moment. We've also got a test drive of the redesigned for 2022 Nissan Frontier. We had the top line Pro 4X off-road oriented model in Baja Storm Pearl, a very interesting.
What do you think of that color?
I dig it.
I do too.
Yeah, yeah, Toyota and Nissan, Toyota especially, and Nissan too, they've got a lot of interesting kind of military industrial colors on their pickups and SUVs and such. And this Frontier, I'm a big fan of the styling of this new Frontier. Even though it's not a complete ground-up redo, they did a great job of giving it a more modern look on the body styling, and then the interior is vastly improved as well. So we've got a full test drive review of that. An interesting corollary, both in color and concept to that Frontier, we've got a vintage photo feature from our collectible automobile archives on the 59 Chevy 3100 Apache pickup truck, which is a interesting kind of taupe color that's an interesting complement to that Nissan. And it's also a 4x4, which, Tom, you and I had this discussion. 4x4 pickups, very uncommon. Automakers really didn't have in-house 4x4 systems back in the day. So this 59 Chevy is equipped with a system by NAPCO. So interesting vehicle to check out.
Which almost isn't a factory installation. It was a standalone kit you could buy aftermarket that Chevy was putting on at the factory, and it was very expensive.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons those 4x4s back in the day were quite rare is just how much money those 4x4 systems cost back then.
Yeah, that's a cool-looking truck, too.
Yeah. And then finally, speaking of back in the day, we've got, not quite as far back in the day, we've got an article on the 83 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme, which is unusual by today's standards because that was a fairly run-of-the-mill American car. That offered not one, not two, not three, not four, but five engine choices.
Two of them are diesel.
Two of which were diesels, yeah. So interesting look back at that car.
The Cutlass Supreme was for years the best-selling car in Chicago. And I got to admit, that's kind of cool looking.
It is a good-looking car. I think that styling has aged quite well.
I think it has. All right, we're completely out of time. How did we do that?
I blame Joe.
All right, blame Joe here at Cars.com. Wasted all our time today. No, Joe was awesome. And in fact, let me thank Joe of Cars.com for joining us today. We will link to that video, and I think anyone who's thinking about buying an electric car should watch that. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Damon. Thanks to producer Lady B and the good folks here at WCPT in Chicago. You make this look easy. A special shout out to my friends Steve and Johnny. And this is important, if you want to be added to the Car Stuff mailing list, and you completely do, drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. Jill, you're taking the week off next week, right?
I am.
All right, so it's just Damon and I next week. We'll see if that boosts downloads or not.
No, I think your downloads just went way down without
me
there.
Mm-hmm.
That's as much of a preview as we can go here. All right, let's talk more about cars again next week.